From the studios of KPCW in Park City, it's This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about the environment and our relationships with it. I'm Chris Cherniak.
And I'm Nell Larson. Earth Day is this Saturday, April 22nd. And to recognize that day and its origin, history, and meaning, we have two guests this morning.
First up will be Michael Karapetian, coordinator of the Great Global Cleanup. He'll discuss the origin of Earth Day back in 1970, the individuals behind its inception, and the actions and successes that have come from it. Hey, question, which came first, Earth Day or the EPA? That's what we're going to find out.
We'll find that out.
All right.
Then in the second part of the show, we'll localize Earth Day and speak with Nancy Stokes. She's the curator at the Kimball Art Center.
The Kimball has an exhibition titled Between Life and Land, Identity, launching this Friday, the 21st, and continuing until into July. It is the second of a three-part series exhibiting our relationships with and reshaping of our land.
You'll hear about what the Kimball has going on, as well as other Earth Day events and activities, even a competition you may want to participate in, all happening locally at Swanner and the Park City Film Series and Recycle Utah
and
all over town. There's plenty to get involved with.
All right. I'm going to hang around. Environmental Good, awareness I hope so. And education. That's what this Green Earth is all about. Stay with us. Welcome back to This Green Earth, a weekly talk show about our relationships with and impacts upon the environment. I'm Chris Cherniak.
I'm Nell Larson.
And joining us for the first part of the show is Michael Karapetian. He is the coordinator of the Great Global Cleanup. Michael, first of all, thank you so much for joining Nell and me on This Green Earth.
Hi, Chris. Hi, Nell. It's great to be here. Thank you for having me.
Well, thanks for joining us. Obviously, you know, Saturday, April 22nd, is Earth Day, and let's start the conversation with some history and origins of Earth Day. When was the first Earth Day, and why did we have it?
Yeah, absolutely. The first Earth Day was actually in 1970, and so this year we're celebrating our 53rd Earth Day. But to set the stage a little bit, we need to go back a little bit earlier to 1962 when Rachel Carson released her book Silent Spring, mm-hmm. which talked about the impacts of pesticides that have on our environment. And with that momentum that book created, it created an awareness of environmentalism and what modern day environmentalism is in the United States and in the world. In 1969, Senator Gaylord Nelson and Dennis Hayes, they ended up having a teach-in to talk about the Santa Barbara oil spills that were happening during that time. And they realized that this could be a huge movement. So within the next year, they created a staff and they ended up creating the Earth Day in 1970, which had 20 million Americans marching across the country for changes in our environment and create environmental protection, which actually, to answer your question, that you had a little bit earlier in the intro, mm-hmm. was what ended up leading to the creation of the Environmental Protection Agency.
Right, later that year. That's really interesting. That's obviously one of the first and probably to this day one of the biggest successes associated with, you know, Earth Day. But it is also interesting, Michael, that it took 8 years from the time of Rachel Carson's really seminal book, Silent Spring, the Kennedy administration and the Johnson administration, Democratic administrations, not until we got to Nixon, who was no environmentalist, let's be clear. He did his political calculus, sure. To help arrange the formation of the Environmental Protection Agency. But it was under Nixon that the EPA was founded in the fall of 1970.
And yeah, and you know, whenever you have 20 million Americans, which at that time was 10% of the American population, marching and standing up for something, it's going to create waves. And I mm-hmm. think that no matter what administration you have in office, if a large amount of Americans come together and march for something, there will be changes associated with that.
So let's talk a little bit about your organization and the history of that, how that came to be, and how long you guys have been around.
Yes. So that first Earth Day is actually what ended up being EarthDay.org, which is what we go by today. In the past, we went by Earth Day Network, but we ended up changing to EarthDay.org recently. And from that, we created that movement to be the organization that represents the environment and pushes the environmental movement. In 1990, we actually went international. And today we have partners worldwide, but we also have employees and offices in many countries around the world. We have people who work with us in South America. We have an amazing team in India that does phenomenal work. And then we also have some representatives in Africa as well.
Wow. Well, give us an example of some of the things that are going on in India, because they need...
Yes.
They need a lot of things going on, to be honest with you.
Yes. Yes. It is amazing the work there. And then the people of India really are excited to, you know, make changes in their environment for the better. So I run the Great Global Cleanup, so I'm a little biased. I'm gonna talk a little bit about my campaign. Mm-hmm. We're actually doing some long-term rehabilitation projects on a few areas there. There is a Thol Lake, and then also China Mandir Pond. They're in two different sides of the country, but we are working with the government, and we have a grant in process that is helping us do a longer-term project there. So we're getting students from local universities, as well as people who just live around this area, to go into these ponds, and these bodies of waters, which are actually really, really trash, because the people who live there, they were using it as a place to put their waste. And so we're doing cleanups there to rehabilitate those areas, and also do some beautification projects, because what we've learned is that clean begets clean. So if you keep an area, you know, pristine and well-maintained, it will actually take care of itself, and people will, for the most part, not litter in those areas anymore.
As you referenced, obviously, with the name of the program, the Great Global Cleanup, you are running this program all over the world. What does that look like, you know, here in the U.S.?
Yes, so we have some amazing partners here. One of them, Keep America Beautiful, we work with, who has affiliates in all 50 states. I believe they have 700 affiliates now. And we also work with Heal the Bay out of California. At the Santa Monica Pier, and they're an amazing nonprofit. We have partners all across the United States. This year, if you take a look at our global cleanup map, you can see that the United States has a ton of cleanups coming up that anyone can actually participate in. But in the United States, there is a huge movement for cleaning up, and people are really excited about, you know, maintaining their communities, cleaning their communities, and keeping it clean. And that's something that we're really working on, is not just let's go do one cleanup and then unfortunately that area, because of the way trash works, it'll eventually be polluted again, but keeping it clean and then eventually cutting off the plastic waste at its source.
And yeah, let's be clear, when you say clean up and keeping it clean, you're talking about solid waste, i.e. or e.g. litter, etc. Is that what you're really focused on?
Yes. So the Great Global Cleanup is a community movement, really, and it's about going out to your own community and picking up litter, plastic waste, water bottles, glass mm-hmm. bottles, aluminum cans, whatever solid waste you can find out there, and keeping your community clean and preventing that from going to the next community and eventually the ocean, because all water ends up leading to the ocean, right? So it's about preventing that waste from getting there, and also preventing it at the source in the first place.
Yeah. Hey, that's a good point, Michael. Well, let me introduce you first before I get that. I was speaking with Michael Karapetian. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. He is the coordinator with the Great Global Cleanup. I believe the quick website that people can go to learn more about it, is it earthday.org?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And learn more about. And I want to circle back to that last comment you made, was that, yeah, we all do our best to go out there with our litter picker uppers and our bags and trash bags and pick up stuff. But hey, how does that stuff get there in the first place? Who is the source of all this trash? It's not me. I don't think. It's not Nell. Is it you, Nell?
It's me.
All right. And it's not you, Michael. So two out of three of us are pretty good. But how do we educate the public on stop being the source of all this trash?
Yes. So the unfortunate part is our waste management system, although in the United States, we have to admit it is good compared to a lot of other places in the world. But it's not 100% perfect. And a lot of the waste that we think is going to the landfill in one way or another ends up not going to the landfill,
right.
Whether it's falling off the truck or just not making it all the way there. And that's one method. And then there's also just being people, none of us try to litter, but the truth is it happens. And I can think of many examples of in my own life where it's like, where did that receipt go? Where did that, I could have sworn I had like a water bottle with me or,
right.
It just happens. It falls out of our truck, falls out of our car. And there was I think a study done of, they sent 100 hikers up a mountain that was clean. And when they came back down, just with the way it happened, that there was a lot more trash left, not on purpose. These are people who really cared about the environment, but it's a piece of your shoe comes off, or you put the wrapper in your backpack and it just flies away.
Oh, so this is waste that came off of them inadvertently.
Yes.
Right. Okay. All right. The accidental source of waste. Well, yeah, we have no shortage of cleanups here, Michael. As our 4 and 5 feet of snow finally melt, the flotsam, that's what I call it, the flotsam and jetsam of our bad behavior begins to appear. And our town is now, the snow disappears and it's replaced by plastic wrappers and, like you say, water bottles. And, maybe not this year, but the last few years, masks and everything like that. And that's the aim here, to try to clean all that up and try, hopefully prevent it from happening in the future. So do you have programs, say, out here in Salt Lake or out west in general going on?
Yes. Actually, before this meeting, I checked our map, and we do have a lot of cleanups happening and around Salt Lake City, which I know is near Park City.
Right.
There is a lot of cleanups that are happening in your area. And there's also a lot happening out west, especially in California and Oregon and Seattle. We actually planned a really large cleanup happening in Seattle this Saturday with the Parks and Rec Department there, where every single park in Seattle can be cleaned up.
Ah, nice. Okay.
So taking a step back and looking at earthday.org as a whole, what are some of the other, projects or program areas that your organization is prioritizing right now?
Yes. Yeah, so cleanups are just one of the amazing campaigns we have. We also have the Canopy Project, which, every $1 donated directly goes to planting a tree somewhere. And we're working actually in India, in the Sonderbahn region, planting mangroves. And that's really great because it also functions as a community activism project, because a lot of people in the community support these trees, maintain these trees, and make sure that their roots are set and they can grow and be the trees that we're trying to make them.
Right. I mean, mangroves are critical, create critical nursery habitat for what's the word for young fish?
Fry,
that's it. Remember that quiz? For fry and
right.
Juvenile marine species. Yeah, so mangroves are critical species. Not to mention that they also give us oxygen and take up carbon dioxide.
And so, buffer us from storms, and buffer, from erosion. They
you know
do
what?
It all.
The mangroves are far more important than us.
This interview is about mangroves now.
Thank you, Michael. No, but that's great. The different types of projects that are going on. How do people, let's talk about the website again and going there and learning more about this.
Yes. So if you want to get involved, you can go to earthday.org. You'll see a button that says Earth Day 2023. There we have our global events map, which has not only our cleanups, but also all the Earth Day events happening worldwide. And I think there's now over 10,000 events on the map currently that you can go check out and join. So there is absolutely a ton of events that just check out your area and see what's going on. And if there is nothing in your area, we have plenty of resources on there on how to start your own event. Or even if it's just going out and doing a cleanup. Doing a cleanup is really the easiest way to get involved. Just go around your neighborhood and pick up trash you see and make your community big and know that you're joined a global movement of people who are doing this.
Looking ahead, I mean, Earth Days are, we've celebrated, this will be the 53rd Earth Day. There's going to be a 54th and 55th, et cetera. Are there plans and future endeavors that you could give us a hint to?
Yes. So something huge going on in the international United Nations community is INC, which is the meeting to create a internationally legally binding instrument against plastic pollution. And this May is the second one. It's going to be in Paris. And this is going to be similar to the Paris agreements that's happened in the past or the Montreal agreement. And this is to create something that all countries worldwide can do to prevent plastic waste from going to the environment and figuring out a solution to that. So that's something huge that's going on. Mm. I have a feeling that it won't be widely talked about until the fifth one. Hmm. Which is the last one, and that'll be in South Korea in about a year. So that's something that we're working on and heavily invested on, and making sure that what comes out of that is something that is best for the planet and best for people all over.
That's great. Well, last minute or two, Nell and I are both in the environmental field, environmental professionals. We're always curious about how our guests got involved in the environmental field. What's your background?
Yes, so it was actually in college. I was studying at the University of Florida, and I decided to just to pick up a minor in sustainability, and I loved it. I fell in love with it. Hmm. I ended up getting an internship actually at National Cleanup Day, and they're based out of Colorado. And I got an internship with them, and that opened my eyes to the world of cleanups, and I worked with them for a little bit. And we're actually still partners today, and we work very heavily together on developing the global cleanup map. And I worked with them, and then eventually I got connected with EarthDay.org, and cleanups have been my life ever since.
For job security, I hope cleanups aren't your life forever. You know, that's your goal, right? To go out of
put
work.
Put yourself
ideally.
Out of business.
Yes, exactly.
Exactly. But yeah, we always joke around about, we're trying to put ourselves out of business.
Yeah.
Which is really the hope, right?
Right. Well, good luck with that. 53 Earth Days. Hey, you know what? A little pat on the back. Every Tuesday is Earth Day here on Green Earth. So we need more Earth Days. That's the problem. I think there's this idea that, hey, it's Earth Day, I'll do something for the help of the planet. And then April 23rd comes along and, you know, you're throwing your coffee cup out the window or something like that. So we need to have Earth Days. Have you ever talked about that? I mean, how about one in April and say one in the summer and one in the fall or like an Earth season or something?
Earth Day is every day.
I'm glad you brought that up, because what we were really trying to do is push Earth Day every day.
Yes.
And our events go on year round. We have many events. I mean, there's Earth Day in April, but then there's World Environment Day coming up in June, then World Cleanup Day in September. And
okay.
There's also Plastic Free July. You know, we're trying to keep this movement not to be just one day a year, but it's every day. And eventually we're trying to create that behavior change where people do end up, you know, choosing the more sustainable choices and also like having fun, you know.
Right.
Taking care of the earth it's fun.
Well, I'll close with this. Having I was 11 when the first Earth Day was around, and I can remember, believe me, you know, there's a lot of trash and stuff around here, but back in the 60s and 70s, oh, it was unbelievable the amount of garbage, open landfills, unregulated landfills, hazardous waste sites growing up in New Jersey, right? I was surrounded by them. The air pollution, the air quality was terrible, you know, 10 months out of the year. So we've come a long way with respect to our air quality, our water quality. We even get into water quality, but our water quality and our solid waste issues, we've improved quite a bit. And again, Earth Day and Senator Gaylord Nelson and who was it, Dennis Hayes, and they were pivotal in making that change, and you know, a long list of others. And regulations like the EPA and state DEPs, et cetera, have made big differences. So we still have a ways to go, but of course we always have a ways to go. But we've come a long way. So that's my final word, Michael. I'll give you the final word.
Yes, no, I agree. I do feel like we've come a long way, but we've also learned a lot more, and there's a lot more to do. But yeah. I think people are waking up and realizing that this is something that we can do and also something that we should do.
And our listeners can test their knowledge about this with a number of quizzes from your website.
Oh,
right, Michael?
Really?
Yes. Yes, we do have a number of quizzes on our website. So I encourage all your listeners to go to earthday.org. All of our resources there, the Great Global Cleanup, the Global Cleanup Map, and Global Events Map, all our quizzes, and a lot more to take action.
All right, Michael Karapetian. He is a coordinator with the Great Global Cleanup. You can find out more about that and all the other programs and projects they're involved in by just going to earthday.org. Michael, thank you so much for joining us this morning on This Green Earth.
Thank you, guys.
Welcome back to This Green Earth. I'm Nell Larson.
And I'm Chris Cherniak.
And joining us now in the studio to help us celebrate Earth Day here in Summit County is Nancy Stokes, curator at the Kimball Arts Center. Welcome.
Thank you. I'm so happy to be here.
So you guys have you're midway, I guess, through a series of exhibits that kind of examine our relationship with the environment. Tell us about the exhibit that you just brought in.
Yes. So we live in such a special place, and we really wanted to celebrate that. And so Between Life and Land is our current exhibition series. It started last December, so as you said, we are midway through it. And we really wanted to take this opportunity over the course of an entire year to dive deeper into our relationship to land. And so the first chapter looked at the land art movement and the incredible ways the artists have used earth and materials to examine our relationship to place and to time and the larger cosmos in a way. This Friday, we will open the second chapter in this very exciting series. And the focus of this upcoming exhibition is the intersections of land and identity. And so it really takes a step back and thinks about our histories, thinks about our identities, and the ways that that has shaped our relationship to land today.
And are these local artists that are going to be exhibiting? Or?
Yeah, so it's a group exhibition. We have 15 artists in the show. Half of them live in Utah and really have made incredible work that's really about the West specifically and oftentimes specifically about Utah. But in addition to that, we have artists from all around the country. So it's a really great mix of local and national and even international artists as well.
I'm curious about how you put exhibits like these together. Nancy, are you working with these artists individually to compile them all and seek these out and share this theme? Or is this something where a group of artists had this together and they're coming to you?
No, so this is something that I've been putting together over the last year or so. And so it's exactly like you said, it's me having those great conversations with artists from all over, telling them about the exhibition that we want to do, the conversations that we want to have, mm-hmm. and then working to bring their work here to the Kimball Arts Center.
What are the works? Are they mostly paint or print or what are some of the installations?
Yeah, I'm so glad you asked. This this is going to be a really exciting mix of all different media. So we have everything from photography to beautiful large painting to incredibly exquisite pencil drawings to we have an actual sculpture of a homestead in the galleries. We have an incredible sculpture by a highly renowned artist, Wendy Redstar. So it's really a great mix of all different media.
I think I'm going to speak for both of us here, Chris, so tell me if I'm wrong. But I think as people that come from more of a science background rather than artistic or creative background, we sometimes struggle to talk about more creative endeavors and their relationship with the environment. And I know that's a goal of this and a lot of your work, not just this series. How do you encourage people to engage with the art and engage with these topics that might not already be comfortable doing that?
Yeah, that's a great question. You know, I think the wonderful thing about art is that it's all about telling stories and kind of asking questions. And so my hope is that when people come into the galleries, they're just kind of open to exploring some new ideas and thinking about what our relationship to land is. And I think the artists in the show are really they're thinking about issues of land ownership or land use, land stewardship, all of these really important questions, and from all different perspectives. And like I said before, it's really the artists are telling different stories in different ways.
I think that you have an interactive element with this exhibit where people can kind of take some time to be creative on their own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's such an important value that we have at the Kimball, is really combining our focus on the exhibitions as well as our educational work that we do. And so we want to provide these opportunities to extend the ideas and the processes that the artists use in their work and allow our visitors to also take time to be creative and to take the ideas that they're thinking about to take that next step. And so we have several different opportunities in the galleries to make stuff, to contribute to collaborative activities.
And, you know, these may be, you know, crafts or artistic. And I think often when people see these interactive elements in museums, you think like, oh, that's for the kids or like the families, right? But you guys specifically don't say that. It's for all visitors, right?
It is. We really want to design them so that people of all ages can have a lot of fun and can interact with them. Absolutely.
We're speaking with Nancy Stokes. She's a curator at the Kimball Arts Center, and we're talking about an exhibition that the center is launching April 21st.
This Friday, 6 to 8 p.m.
Right. And it will continue until July 9th. It's entitled Between Life and Land, Identity. And you're saying that this is the second of three. So again, summarize the mm-hmm. first exhibition. That was Life and Land
Material. Exactly. And so that was a group of artists who are using materials from the land, artists who are collecting flowers and soil and grasses and all of these different things, rocks, as a way to really think, ground us in thinking about place and about the passing of time and that kind of thing. Mm. And then the third chapter will open July 21st, and that's will be another group show combining artists working here locally as well as nationally, and looking at the impact that we've had on the land over the last several hundred years, thinking about climate change, thinking about how the land is radically changing right now, and how that's impacting our relationship to it, of course. And so thinking about how we can live more sustainably with the land today.
Right. So there's crisis, obviously, in the title, but there's also some type of perhaps solutions or insight.
Absolutely.
Into solving, addressing this crisis that
exactly.
we have.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
And that starts immediately after.
It does.
July. Okay.
Yeah.
So are the works that you have in these series of exhibitions, like, are they created specifically for this, or are they work that this artist has already done and that's why you've contacted them?
Yes, so all of the work has been made by the artist in the past, And I've reached out to them because of knowing that they've made this really interesting work that contributes so perfectly for the theme that we're thinking about. And so it's really a matter of knowing what's out there and putting together this wonderful little puzzle of artworks that come together for the exhibition.
Amazing.
Yeah.
So again, some of the specific issues address, obviously it's land related, but it can be water, it can be air, it could be biodiversity, right? I mean, each artist has the latitude to touch on whatever area of land identity they want.
Exactly. Yeah, we wanted it to be broad. I mean, there's so many interesting ideas, so many ways this ideas, you know, mm-hmm. that the artists are talking about.
Right.
And I think it's nice to bring those together in one place.
Okay. Again, the program starts this Friday,
starts 21st.
Is there kind of like an opening little gala or so, or
yes,
event?
Yes, please join us this Friday, 6 to 8. Many of the local artists will be in attendance, so you can meet them, mingle with them.
I always like that.
Yeah, it's a wonderful
a little
opportunity. Yeah, exactly. Hear them talk about their work. We'll also have some live music, cash bar.
Right.
Okay. It's going to really be a really fun evening. And then we have some great programs going on over the next few months to accompany the exhibition as well. And those are on our website, so please check that out as well.
Those are aside, it's necessary to say, from an environmental angle. They were just other programs going on.
Programs that, relate to
and
the
classes.
And of
Kimball's
course,
great,
classes
all your
the
classes.
Time. Yep.
For adults and kids, et cetera, that's happening.
Exactly.
Going on.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
We're going to be talking about these upcoming events for Earth Day. And there are a couple of events that are related to this series of exhibitions about our relationship with the land. And we just wanted to get those on our listeners' radar while we have Nancy here in the studio. So what do you have coming up?
So May 31st is going to be a musical performance by Raven Chacon. He's an incredible artist and composer. And he's actually the winner of the of last year's Pulitzer Prize in Music. It's a really incredible opportunity to hear a piece by this great composer, and the performers are going to be students from Park City High School, so I'm really excited about that collaboration. His piece is called American Ledger Number 1, and it's a piece about the history of the United States of America from an indigenous perspective.
Wow.
So it's going to be a really powerful piece.
That's May?
May 31st.
May 31st, okay.
Yeah. After that, in June, we have a wonderful tradition of cowboy poetry here in Utah, and so we're going to collaborate with cowgal poet Sam DeLuo and her musician friend, David Anderson, mm-hmm. and they're going to do an incredible evening of poetry and music at the Kimball, and that's going to be on June 9th. And then we have a great book discussion program that we run at the Kimball Arts Center that goes alongside our exhibitions, tapping into the themes of the shows. And so we're going to be reading Wallace Stegner's Wolf Willow. And such a great author, thinking about the West and identity. Right. And so we're going to enjoy that book discussion later on in June.
In June, okay. Mm-hmm.
Fantastic. Well, I'm glad we were able to keep you around for another minute to share those. They all sound great.
Course.
And again,
I haven't read Wolf Willow yet, so I'm going to have to join.
No, neither have I.
Yeah.
And that's great. We need more environmental book discussions like that. And so,
absolutely.
Again, all of that is available on the website, kimballartcenter.org.
Yes.
Fantastic. All right. Well, thanks again,
so
Nancy. We'll let you go this time.
Thank you.
All right. So now let's move on and talk about some other activities going on this week with respect to Earth Day.
Yeah.
I guess I'll start with whatever the group you work with, associated with.
Whatever group that is. So at Swaner Preserve and Eco Center.
Yes.
We do live by the mantra that every day is Earth Day.
Okay, good.
But we have provided a few extra ways for people to get involved and just enjoy our local environment, give back if they're feeling inspired. Although we were talking about, you know, these trash pickups we do every spring, and at Swanner we often, not often, every year, we do a pickup in to cover the Kimball Junction area, Highland Drive, 224, Redstone New Park area, as well as the preserve. But we had to push it back because there's still so much snow and water.
Sure.
So that's early May now, but that will be coming. Yeah.
Okay. And again, you find bags and bags and bags. You fill
bags
of trash.
Okay. I wish I had those stats on the top of my head from last year's cleanup. But it is like hundreds and hundreds of pounds. It's like enormous bags, the most random things, like. But also just plenty and plenty of the things that our guest earlier, Michael Karapetian, was mentioning. You know, it's the water bottles and the plastic bags and the everyday.
And the food containers. But what one thing that I always found interesting, I'll never forget, was the fact that there would be styrofoam food containers that are out on the preserve we pick up.
Yes.
But whatever residue of food that might still remain in those containers, they were picked at by the birds or the animals, and you could see literally the beaks of the animals poking through the styrofoam as they went after the food. So not only are they, first of all, they're eating, you know, French fries, and secondly, they're poking a hole through there, and we're probably getting bits of styrofoam too. So there's real impacts associated, health impacts associated with our litter.
Yeah, there are definitely wildlife impacts from that. And that's one of the reasons why, as the snow melts in the spring, it's such an important time to get out there and pick this stuff up so it doesn't, you know, continue to accumulate and kind of have that impact.
And
we want to minimize it where we can.
And like you say, it's delayed a bit to accommodate the
snow melts.
High run. And you know what? Maybe if we have a minute, we'll get into that, because it'll be Swanner's going to have probably see some of the highest water levels in years, right?
Yeah, we are seeing some high flows. We still haven't broken 2011's record, but we can talk about that later or next week when we'll have another week of data. But we have some events coming up through this next week. Tomorrow night, we have a dark sky walk out on the preserve from 8:30 to 10 p.m. And that'll be led by our naturalist, Alpha Lambert, who studied, you know, dark skies and the dark skies program at the University of Utah. And so she'll be sharing elements of the dark sky. And our nighttime walks like this often sell out, but I checked yesterday and we still do have a handful of spots for this one. So if you've been trying to get into one of these, you can likely get a spot on the dark sky walk for tomorrow night.
And is that a walk out onto the preserve?
It is, yeah. And so depending on conditions, we'll make this call tomorrow. It might be snowshoes, it might be muck boots, and we'll provide that for the attendees if we're out on snowshoes.
Well, it's supposed to be cold tomorrow, clear, so that's great.
Yes,
the weather's going to clear up, and it may be more wintry,
more of a winter night than a spring.
So, okay.
Yeah.
So, but anyway, you're out there looking up.
Yeah. Yep. Okay. She'll be talking about dark skies, what we can see in the sky, the importance of having darkness at night, and all those good things. And then on Thursday evening, we have a collaboration with the Park City Film series on a film called Going Circular. And we're really excited about this film. It's about sustainability and what the future of our production and economy could look like if it becomes circular, right? So, you know, rather than goods having kind of a linear life cycle, you know, the materials are extracted, a product is made, we use it, and then it goes in the trash to the landfill. The idea is that once you're done with something, you can go right back into the beginning of a circle, become something else, or be reused. But the film features a variety of perspectives of, you know, emerging scientists at the end of their career. There's a 102-year-old inventor. There's, you know, a former, you know, banker from J.P. Morgan who's working on sustainable finance. It's a variety of perspectives just looking at, like, what we can do. It's very positive and I think, encouraging, right, which is something that we don't get maybe a ton of in the environmental field. So we're excited about the film for that reason. And then there's a fantastic panel of people that has agreed to help us with a discussion after the film. And I'll be moderating that. So I'm really looking forward to it. We have Dr. Rose Judd Murray from Utah State University. She's in the College of Ag and Applied Sciences. Dr. Amber Williams, who is in the Outdoor Product Design and Development Department at Utah State University. So looking at the goods that we use in the outdoor industry. We have Dr. Sarah Jack Hinners. She's the director of the Center for Ecological Planning and Design at the University of Utah. And then we have Kenner Kingston of Place Collaborative, who we've also spoken with about other sustainable architecture and programs on this show, actually. Mm-hmm. And so this group of people is going to help us reflect on what we saw in the film and share some of the emerging projects and potential that they're seeing right now. So that should be a fun one.
Again, the day?
That is Thursday night. It's this Thursday.
This Thursday.
And it's free. So thanks to our sponsors for that. And we are also hoping that if people do plan to come, they'll register online through Park City Films website, just so we have an idea of the number of people to expect.
I mean, you do have a limit.
We do have a
seating
limit. We do have a limit. I don't expect we'll meet that.
Okay.
So you can come, but it'll help us plan for the other logistics around it, if you don't mind. There's also a Green Reads book club coming up.
Oh, another book club.
Another
Excellent.
Book club. I know
need
you
more
made
of
this
those.
Comment.
We need more
well,
of
Chris, I will expect to see you there.
Okay, what is it?
So Swanner and the Park City Library and Vail Epic Promise are partnering for a Green Reads book club at the Park City Library and it's on the book Eager by Ben Goldfarb. And I'm super excited about this. I love this book. I'm actually leading the discussion for this book club as well. And this book, Eager, is all about beavers. And it's all about the impact they have and their history. We've interviewed Ben.
All right.
It's about the emerging science and restoration taking place with them. It's just it's a fascinating, fun read. But the Park City Library also does a great job with these Green Reads book club. And they say, realistically, if you haven't finished the book, don't worry. Here's a podcast or an article that you can read to kind of fill in any blanks. So hop online and you can see the information about that on Swanner's website.
Perfect.
Park City Mountain or Park City Library.
I never read these books when I go to these books, but that never stops me from asking questions or making comments about it. So. However, like you say, we've interviewed Ben Goldfarb about the book.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah,
so I know something about it.
A couple years ago when it came out, I think. Yeah.
Okay.
That's Saturday, April 22nd, 3:30 to 4:30 p.m.
Ooh, that's a difficult one. All right,
I don't know. Saturday. It's great. You can get in your last day of skiing. Maybe not your last day. Head over to the book club.
No. Okay.
There's just more. There's always more. There's a Swanner Shorts
Good.
Earth Day discussion.
Good, we don't have any more underwriters, so keep going. We got to go to tough.
Yeah,
go.
So on Friday afternoon, we have a program at Swanner called Swanner Shorts. One of our naturalists just puts on a really brief presentation, interactive, something to check out. It might be out on the back deck. It will not be on the back deck this week, probably. Hmm. But this week, it'll be focused on Earth Day and that history. So keeping with the theme from today's show, you can just show up and enjoy that if the timing works for you. And then our current traveling exhibition for the planet, which is the mini golf. Chris, have you been into play yet?
I don't think so.
Not that I recall.
Not that I recall.
Well, you've got just a couple of weeks because it closes at the end of April. But I wanted to share that we have a free day on Sunday. So we always get sponsors and supporters to make these free days possible. And so you can come anytime during our open hours. Generally, it's Wednesdays through Sundays, 10 to 4. And right now we have extended hours Thursday and Friday evenings. So you can come play putt-putt with your friends.
So wait a minute, really, you have an actual miniature golf course set up?
Yeah, so it's 9 holes.
Yeah.
It's an environment-themed mini golf course.
Okay.
We have, your scorecards. Each one has... a different environmental message or lesson.
A windmill or solar, a solar panel that
we're learning
to,
about, bears and bats and echolocation.
Beaver dam, you have to
and butterflies
put the ball
and exactly. There's a forest. There's so it's a ton of fun. And I have to say the staff has played it a few times. We had a cutthroat game yesterday during staff meeting, but it's a fun course, and we have a free day on Sunday for those people who haven't checked it out yet. Okay. We encourage you to come on in and enjoy that.
Okay.
Environment-themed mini golf, you know?
Well, you finally heard me, because I've been saying for years you should parcel out a bit of
for
a miniature golf course and
right.
batting cages. I think you need an environmental theme.
Well, you know,
batting cage.
I hate Maybe. To say it, but we find a fair number of golf balls out in the preserve. So,
speaking of which, I'm
again,
sorry.
Those have a huge impact. Please don't do that. We try to pick
don't
them up.
Don't be a knucklehead and hit 9 irons out on the preserve. Okay. Speaking of which, a real quick aside. On Nextdoor, my secret shame. Someone posted a photo of somebody cross country skiing out on the preserve, and then of course there's the threads that follow. About,
gosh, how has this not made it on my radar?
Yeah, you haven't seen it. All right, so this photo, blurry. You know, it's a telephoto type shot. An individual cross country skiing, whatever. On the preserve, as it was described, okay? And then, of course, the responses were typically like, oh, that's awful, that's terrible, must be a tourist, no local, whatever. And then somebody also said, hey, that person's skiing on 3 feet of snow, it doesn't do any harm, what's the harm? A, you're not aware of this, and B, it was not you, of course.
Yeah.
I'm assuming, and C, it's not allowed.
Yeah, and it's a great question. And the person who made the point, like, oh, you're on top of 3 feet of snow, it's ice, it's what's the problem? It's a great point, because a lot of times when we think about our impact, we think about erosion or crushing plants or all these other things. At this time of year, what we are worried about, what we're concerned about, are the wildlife. So we have wildlife that are really struggling right now because it's the end of a long, cold, very deep winter. Mm-hmm. And so if there are ungulates that are, you know, hiding behind willow bushes or bedded down in hollows, they're going to be disturbed by this, as well as migratory birds. So even though there's a lot of snow out there and the little pockets between the snow or even on top of the snow, these birds are doing their best to nest and to feed and to rest. And so, again, this is just a super sensitive area, even when it is covered with snow.
Sure.
So, we would just ask that, despite that tempting crest cruising out there, maybe save that for another place and kind of let this preserve area do what it's intended to do. It was preserved for really strategic reasons. It's an important spot. So let's just try to leave them.
Right.
Like, let it.
And
let
of
it
course,
be.
If you mm-hmm. take the attitude, what's the harm? Maybe, like you say, it's not such a harm from, say, a structural point
totally.
Of view.
Yeah.
But it's disturbing. I like that word, disturbing. It's mm-hmm. disturbing habitat that might be around there. And it's disturbing from the fact that you shouldn't be out there to begin with. And if one person sees it, another knucklehead's going to see it and say, oh, wow, there's some. I think it's
right.
Good
it's not
for
just
me,
about
too.
The one so person. It's about our collective impact.
It's the collective impact.
Yeah.
Theme of our show.
Yeah.
All right.
And I gotta say, I'm a skate skier. I understand the temptation.
You're right there.
I'm just looking out at it.
Yeah.
But I'm holding out.
Don't do it. Stay off the preserve. The preserve all 4 seasons.
Well, we have 10 miles of trails. You can use those.
That's another story.
All right, we have to wrap up.
All right. You can email us your thoughts, comments, and ideas for topics and stories you'd like us to cover at thisgreenearth@kpcw.org.
And as always, the interviews for today's show will be posted on the KPCW website in a few hours later today. And you can also find our show anywhere you find your podcasts.
All right. And again, real quick, thanks to Nancy Stokes, curator, Kimball Arts Center. Lots of programs going on there starting Friday, April 21st.
Thanks again for joining us. And remember, this is KPCW 91.7 FM Park City.